Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. I want to start out sending thoughts and prayers out to our fellow Americans in Northern California. They were awoken early this morning to a 6.0, or according to some reports, as large as a 6.4 magnitude earthquake this morning out in the Napa Valley area. So far from the reports, it sounds like things could have been a whole lot worse, but we do have reports that currently have somewhere in the neighborhood of 89 injured, three of which critical, and just sporadic hit and miss damage. Some buildings literally leveled, other buildings left looking untouched. So for those of you out in the California area, I do hope that that you weren't affected too terribly, and for those of you who were, our thoughts and prayers are with you, and let's just kind of move on from there. You'll undoubtedly receive plenty of aid and assistance from your neighbors and friends, both in the state of California and from across the country, because that's what we do. As Americans, we are among the most generous and the most, what's the best word, altruistic societies that exist. We help people that need help, or at least that's what we try to do. All right, let me go ahead and delve into today's title topic, and that is the jihad serial killer. There has not been a whole heck of a lot of information going out in the media. I've seen a little more of this story picking up mostly on the web. I probably shouldn't be that concerned about that anymore, because most people these days, that's where they get their information from. I shouldn't be that bothered by the fact we don't see much of it on television, because who's watching TV? I barely watch TV that much myself, so that's where we're at. But here's the thing. For a few months now, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 months, we have had an issue with a gentleman by the name of Ali Mohammed Brown. This guy has been running around the country. He's been mostly in the Washington state area, mostly around Seattle, actually. But he has been recently picked up and charged in New Jersey with the murder of a college teenager by the name of Brendan Telvin. Now, Brown, of course, is already facing death penalty charges in Washington State for the murder of DeJuan Anderson Young and Ahmed Saeed. That took place back in July. He escaped the Seattle area. He was arrested back in July, around on the 18th, in New Jersey. Now, the things that you need to know about this guy is he has made it clear that these murders are the acts of jihad. The Essex County prosecutor identified Brown as the suspect in the murder of Brendan, and he reports that Brown had been arrested with New Jersey-based associates Jeremy Felicin and Eric Williams. Telvin was found shot to death inside his SUV in West Orange, New Jersey. That took place on June 25th. Now, the police believe the gun used to kill Devlin was the same one used in the murders of DeJuan Anderson Young and Ahmed Saeed. Brown was linked to the murders through the gun. And according to the prosecutors, the same gun was also used to kill two gay men in Seattle as well. Now, the things that you need to know is that Brown is a devout Muslim. The cops in Seattle believe that the murder of Dwan Young and Ahmed Sid in Seattle were hate crimes. There's further speculation that Brown's devout Muslim beliefs may have been a motive. According to his own Facebook page, Brown makes his faith very clear. The last activity on the page was Brown joining a group called Remove the Page Allah is a Criminal. He's already served time for fraud. Between 2002 and 2004, Brown, along with three accomplices, successfully defrauded the Bank of America, Washington Mutual, Wells Fargo, and other banks out of large sums of money. The scam involved depositing counterfeit and fake checks, then withdrawing funds before the checks were returned. Now, Brown served time in federal prison as a result, and then in March 2012, Brown pled guilty in communications with a minor for immoral purposes. As a result, he did a further year in prison. Brown has terrorist ties in Somalia. The Seattle Times reported that Brown may be a jihadi. Excuse me. Okay, I like, you know, it's the Seattle Times, so don't be surprised when they use terms like maybe. The paper reported that Brown has ties to extremist groups in Somalia after his arrest in 2004. An FBI informant said that there had been a lot of jihad talk among Brown and his accomplices. Though the informant added, quote, most of the money went into their pockets. Now, he's a native of Seattle. According to Brown's Facebook page, he's an entrepreneur. He lists his hometown as Seattle, but it says that he lives in Kent, Washington, which is 27 miles south of Seattle. Now, when we hear things like the threats that came from ISIS saying, Seattle, how are you? Seattle, be safe. It makes you wonder if it's references to people like this that they maybe didn't know about. This guy claims that his faith is the reason for going around and killing these people. Now, I keep hearing people constantly tell us that this is a perversion of Islam, and it may very well be. But regardless of whether or not it is or isn't, the fact that it's being downplayed in the media, you have to wonder what the purpose of that is. Those of us who are not Muslim need to know that the threat is real, that there are people within our own borders already, people who were born and raised here, people who are American citizens, people who have embraced this radicalized form of Islam, who are willing to kill us because we're infidels in their eyes. We need to understand that that threat is real. I mean, it goes to the very heart of what we're seeing with ISIS. The mainstream media doesn't really seem to want to tell us what the deal is. Now, according to statements that this gentleman, and I'll use that term loosely, has made on his own, the four men, and let me emphasize at least four men, because that's all that's been confirmed to this point, there may very well be more, who have died during the late spring and early months. He made the statement that these were acts of vengeance on behalf of the aggrieved Muslims. The self-confessed murderer has proclaimed that these are acts of vengeance, that this is punishment to America because of our foreign policies. Now, if he's making these statements, then we have to know that he's making these statements. Because whether this guy is some lone wolf, like the media is so far portraying, or he really is part of some sleeper group, or who knows what else, the truth is this man is willing to take these steps because he believes that Allah is going to reward him for it. He believes this. Now, does this paint a bad picture on the favorite term, of course, is moderate Muslims? Yes, it does. But part of the reason that it paints that picture for the moderates is because the moderates don't come out strong enough in condemning these activities. And even when they do come out and condemn terrorist actions around the world, whether it's here or there or anywhere, you always wonder what depth is involved. Now, there's been a little more focus put on the story since Michelle Malkin came out and wrote a piece about it. Actually, I think that came out yesterday. But the long and the short of this story still comes to the fact that we are here in this country and we are targets because we are not part of the faith that these people insist on us being. And when I say these people, I'm not including all of Islam. I'm not. But the problem that we face is we don't know which Muslims are part of this movement. We don't know which ones aren't part of the movement but are okay with it. And we don't know which ones are completely appalled by it. And it's impossible to tell because when you look at the Quran, when you look through the Hadith, when you look through the other holy writings, there are lots of different occasions where it's made quite clear that it's okay to kill infidels, that it's okay to lie to infidels if it advances the cause of Islam, that it's okay to break contracts, which would also include treaties, wouldn't it? In the chat room, got a little activity. Cog, C-O-G, says that I should be including all of Islam, that that's the only thing that will save us. And, you know, I can't argue against it. I certainly understand that mindset. But what we've got to really realize is that there are people that their heart's not really in it. They've been brought up in this fashion. And, you know, they no more want to kill you or me than they want to have their own family blown up. But the problem is we don't know who's who. So it's necessary to take a very aggressive, defensive stance against all of Islam because of that. We see the need for it when we look at groups like ISIS. ISIS right now is continuing to extend their reach and their power, and we have an equivocator. We have an equivocator in the office who doesn't understand foreign policy. I've heard several times in the last few weeks certain pundits make references to the fact that if we have a feckless foreign policy being carried out by the occupier. Well, I got to tell you, I don't think there is a feckless foreign policy. I don't think there's a foreign policy at all. I think Hillary Clinton, when she came out trying to distance herself from the Obama administration, presumably to assist her chances of becoming a viable candidate, that she came out and told a little more truth than most people would like. She was the Secretary of State. If anybody would know, it would be her. Can we ever expect the truth from Hillary Clinton? That would probably only be accidental, if ever. But regardless, when she said there really was no foreign policy, I believe that. I think that's way more truthful than possibly anything either Bill or Hillary has said in the entirety of their political careers. Mary in the chat room is asking, can we expect truth from any Democrat? Well, you know, the truth of the matter is, and I know I'm probably going to get a little heckles on this, but yeah, I think you can. But I don't think you should from anyone that's in the political limelight. Because, and here's the reason why. Here, where I'm at, there is a tradition of the Democratic Party being dominant. Tennessee has become a red state, but it has not been one for very long. But part of why it was a blue state for as long as it was had nothing to do with this current socialist progressive movement that has devoured the Democratic Party. There was a time, and not really that long ago in political terms, where the Democratic Party was not completely consumed by the progressives. You had people that honestly loved America who were in the Democratic Party. And you have a lot of people that vote, your average everyday citizen, some of which are the low information folks that we constantly have to be trying to reach out to, get them some level of information and get it into their hands so that they don't remain low information voters. Those people continue to vote Democrat because they bought into lies that they had been told when the party started this movement from just being left of center to far left, let's overthrow the government and become a socialist communist society. I talk to people every day who claim to be Democrats, but they sound conservative, and I'm still trying to get them to understand the disconnect from where their national party is now and where they're at. But it gets difficult to make any headway when we exist primarily in a two-party system. And the Republicans don't do very much to help their cause, either by being too weak on policies or failing to properly express themselves. They don't stand up for what they're for. And they just kind of sit back and take the whipping from the media, too. We have media sources now that are willing to tell the conservative side of the story. We need to take advantage of that. And if the politicians won't, then we need to keep looking for somebody else. And I've said a multitude of times, those of you like Mary, for example, who have been listening to the show for a long time, you've heard me a multitude of times say that we need to find people who aren't politicians to vote for, people who are willing to stand up, do the job for a little while, and move out. In the end, I wanted to make this the top story today because I wanted to make sure, first and foremost, that this information is getting out. And this is my medium. This is my opportunity to reach as many people as I can. I've got it through the social media. I've hit it through the Twitter. I've got it up on the Facebook post, over at teapartycommunity.com, and even at ladypatriotspace.com, which I would also tell you a little bit more about them a little bit later. It's important that we know this is happening because the mainstream media is not going to tell us. The mainstream media is not going to tell us this guy is running a jihad. They're not going to tell us that there was this obvious link to Seattle and the threat that we received the day we started dropping bombs on ISIS in Iraq. Stay safe, Seattle. Does anybody remember that quote? This guy's from Seattle initially, or the Seattle area. Got caught when he went to New Jersey. He went coast to coast, and who knows how many more people this guy may have killed in that time frame that just haven't been verified yet. It doesn't take very many people to cause all kinds of havoc. We don't have to have a completely open border on either side to us to have this threat, because we have a ton of people who, for whatever reason, have been drawn and lured to Islam. Feelings of helplessness, feelings of downtroddenness. These people have bought into the lie that comes from the left that the man is against you. And almost every story we're going to talk about today ties back to that mentality. The feeling of hopelessness because you bought into the lie that you can't do any good because somebody else is keeping you down. The lie that there's no point in education because you can't do for yourself. The lie that no matter what you try to do, there's some old white guy back behind some closed door that's going to stop you from ever getting anywhere. We know that's a lie, and anybody who stops and takes a few minutes to think about it, no matter which side of the political spectrum you fall, knows instantly that this is a lie, because how did the people who are telling you this get where they are? How did a completely inexperienced, relatively unknown politician, a community organizer, a supposed constitutional scholar, an educator, get into the office of the President of the United States if it's impossible for you to get there? If that secret group of white guys, which technically Hillary Rodham Clinton would probably be part of, since the Rodham family is a founding member of the Bilderberger Group, not to go too tinfoil hat on you, if those folks are pulling all the strings, if those folks are in control, how did Barack Hussein Obama get there in the first place? Does this serve their purpose? In truth, we have to be made aware. We need to call on our media to start doing their job. Now, I was having a conversation just yesterday in regards to where you go to get honest reporting. And part of what my complaint was is that even Fox News has started reporting with a somewhat liberal slant with some of their stories as of late, because it's just, you see it in how they're reporting. They grab onto some of these headlines and they repeat the headlines instead of coming up with their own. And you wonder why they're doing this. It seems this has been going on since Rupert Murdoch got into a little bit of trouble over in England over the wiretapping and the phone scandal. It seems like from that point, Fox has went that way. Now, the person I was talking to pointed out the Blaze. And I have to tell you that, fan or not of Glenn Beck, it certainly appears that TheBlaze.com and the Blaze News Network do seem to hire plenty of people from both sides, and they try to get both sides out there so everybody knows, so that you can make up your own mind. So you hear facts. But I wanted to go ahead and give a little bit of kudos out to the fact that recently, even though in just a limited fashion, CNN has actually done a little bit more honest-to-goodness journalism. So, you know, give them a pat on the back and hope that trend continues. But the rest of our media has become, in essence, a propaganda machine for the left. We have got to start demanding that our media return to a center keel in reporting the news. The place for editorial is in editorial sections. The place for editorials is on editorial opinion shows. If you want to point out to me, for example, let's say the Kelly Files or Hannity show, yeah, you expect to get opinion there, and you should. And if that's what you're going to hold up to why Fox News is far right wing, then you're ignoring the fact that that's supposed to be opinion. But then you look at a network like MSNBC, and nothing comes through without opinion. We have to demand not just better from our politicians, which we have to do, but we have to demand better from our news sources. And what we have to do to get the message across is to tune them out, turn them off. When the money goes away, they get the message. And unfortunately, we live in a time where we have a lot of people that have no love of country, but have a tremendous love of the dollar bill. That's what keeps the truth about stories regarding people like Ala Muhammad Brown out of the spotlight, but stories about Kim Kardashian in the spotlight. One of the hottest topics still trending right now is the so-called controversy over the Washington Redskins name. That's taking up tremendous amounts of time in the news cycle and in the opinion cycle. Now, COG says that Fox is sold out and that they're just another entertainment show now. And in a lot of ways, you're right. And in a lot of ways, Fox as an entirety, all the Fox networks, not just the news network, has been about as far left as you can get. But again, Rupert Murdoch's looking to make money. And you make money by providing programming that people are going to watch. Again, when we go and we demand that our media get back to reporting facts and leaving the slant out of the news articles, there's going to be a huge part of our audience that's just going to go away. They're going to stop paying attention again because the people that are taking the news now, they want to get fired up. They want to hear their point of view. And the truth doesn't matter so much. Never let the truth get in the way of a great story. I think we've all heard that. Mary says that it isn't real news, just opinion. And again, my point back to the editorial shows is absolutely true. You have a ton of folks that are putting out their opinion. And that's all right, too, because you know, that's what this right here is about. But this is a talk show, and I don't pretend to be anything other than somebody that's going to bring you my point of view. And hopefully you'll either agree with me and we'll be all right, or you'll disagree, but we can have a conversation about it. And that's it. Let's have the conversations. Let's see where we go. But we need to have the information. And when the media starts deciding that they're going to give us part of the story, then we've got nowhere to go to get the rest of the story, do we? How can we form, honest and true opinions that are true to how we really feel with only part of the information? Let's look at what's just happened in Ferguson. There are still a lot of things that are not confirmed yet. But the situation, based on things that have been leaked, looks like things are very different than how they were initially portrayed. Now, I still haven't been able to confirm, and I've been trying to. I've been looking into this. I haven't been able to confirm the reports that I heard early on that the Justice Department itself was putting pressure on the Ferguson Police Department not to release information about what happened to the police officer, not to release information about the convenience store robbery. And if all that's true, the Justice Department acted very egregiously. COG, you're welcome. And thank you for helping to spread the word, because that's exactly what we've got to do. And we need to spread this word, not out of hatred towards Islam. I'm no fan and I'm no friend of Islam. I've had several threats. I have come out on this show before and said it is not a religion. It's a death cult. My feelings about Islam are very strong. But this story needs to be out there not because we're spreading anti-Islamic information, but because the American public needs to know that this guy, whether he is the lone wolf that I'm sure the media is going to portray him at as more people force this story to the forefront, or if he's part of a group, either way, we need to know there are operators like this, because it doesn't matter if he's all by himself. It matters that this guy's trying to kill innocent people who had nothing at all to do with anything that's went wrong in this man's life. He's randomly picking these people. He himself has said that this is punishment for America. And in truth, if you're in New Jersey and you're from the Seattle area, how in Allah's name are you supposed to know if the guy you're taking a shot at is even on the other side? I mean, you could just as easily be shooting somebody that's sympathetic to your cause. How smart is that? So the guy's a little out of touch. But we need to know that there are people like this and that they're doing this in the name of their so-called religion. Now, if anybody would like to call in and have a comment, have your say about this before we change gears, you're more than welcome to. You can give us that call at 347-426-3550. We've got a few other topics I'd like to get to today, so if you want to make that call, do so, and we'll get you on the air. All I ask, since I'm not going to be screening the calls, is that you keep it clean. But, I mean, I would love to hear your take on it, too. I mean, that's why you're here. You're listening, and I appreciate you listening. Those of you participating in the chat room, I appreciate you participating. I always enjoy the fact that you people have decided to spend part of your Sunday here with me and listening to my rants and raves, or to hear the guests when I have them on. Speaking of which, a little bit later, we're scheduled to have Cash Easlow on the show. Cash is a musician. If you're familiar with the Nashville music scene, you have undoubtedly heard of Simmons. He's the lead vocalist for the group. And he'll be on the show a little bit later, and we'll be discussing the headline you may have missed story for today. That'll be on the second hour. In the meanwhile, since nobody's calling in, I'm going to take a quick break, and once we do, we'll be shifting gears. We're going to talk a little bit about the so-called birther trial that's still moving forward. So stay with me, and we'll be right back. Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with us. I did want to talk about this case. A lot of people seem to have been bullied away from the topic of Barack Obama's eligibility to hold office. Now, to me, this is a real issue, and it should be treated as such. A lot of people have simply pushed the message to the side under the guise that it will take far too long to get through the whole entirety of this case, that he'll be out of office before anything can be settled. And the bottom line here is that's pretty much true. But the fact of the matter is that everything that this man has signed into law, every executive order that this man has issued, they all become null and void if he was never eligible to hold the office. So the answer to this question still has to be brought to the forefront. We need to find out. Now, according to reports, a California judge has tentatively scheduled a trial for the end of January in a case that officially challenges Barack Obama's eligibility to be the president of the United States. In a process that would skirt impeachment, the trial would answer questions as to whether the president is qualified under the requirements of the Constitution. If the case is heard in the courtroom, it would mark the first time the dispute has been taken to open court, according to one of the attorneys working the case. Now, although it has been a difficult path to get the case heard, it appears that the trial is officially on the books, and it appears that there is a strong list of plaintiffs. The judge did not make an immediate decision on a motion to grant discover, which would open Obama's concealed records. But alternatively, the judge also did not rule out or did not rule to dismiss the case, commenting that there are legitimate constitutional concerns in the case that need to be addressed and resolved. Finally, a little common sense among federal judges. The case would be the first time that the evidence would be heard in the court of law, as the proposal has previously been rejected by other states as well as the Supreme Court. The suit alleges that Obama is a citizen of Indonesia and, in fact, possibly still a citizen of Kenya, usurping the position of the President of the United States and the Commander-in-Chief. Now, I posted this story as soon as I came across it on the Tap Into the Truth Facebook page, and some folks I know asked me if this was really going to move forward now, because we've already had these cases being brought forth. Alabama had a case involving the eligibility of Obama to be on the ballot in the state of Alabama. And because they could never get Obama to actually show up or testify by affidavit or anything along those lines, it's kind of lavished and lingered and has basically went away. In California, the fight's been going on. Dr. Tejas has been fighting that battle in particular. I had her scheduled to be on at one point, and she was unable to meet that obligation, and we've not been able to get our schedules to mesh up again since then. I still would love to talk to her directly on the air and let you guys hear it. Now, Cog in the chat room says that if there was anything at all to this claim that Obama is not a natural-born citizen, both Hillary and McCain would not have hesitated to use it to remove Obama and win the White House. So there must be another explanation. And in all honesty, I've never thought that the natural-born citizenship was even the issue. I think more than anything, what we've had is, for the first time in our country's history that I'm aware of, is that we had a candidate that was never required to offer up their actual birth certificate. I think it's been conclusively shown that the birth certificate he did eventually give up was a fraud. And I think that it's also very clear that if he is in fact a natural-born citizen, his mother had to sign papers giving up his citizenship so that he could attend public schools, in this case a madrasa, in Indonesia when they lived there. Now, again, COG says that the true original birth certificate for a Barack has a different name for his father other than Barack Hussein Sr. And is it as simple as trying to hide the fact that Barack Jr., Barry, as he's so affectionately known during his college years, actually is not the son of Barack Hussein Sr.? Well, I've certainly heard that theory kicked around. I've heard just about everybody and their grandfather being accused of being potential birth biological fathers. And you know, that may be the case. I don't know. And in truth, I wish it wasn't even an issue. But I've always kind of been more concerned at the fact that yes, Frank Marshall Davis is one of the names that I've heard thrown out there as well. Cog in the chat room has thrown that out. But one of the things that I've always kind of thought is that if he gave up his citizenship to attend a madrasa in Indonesia, which we know was necessary, they don't allow non-citizens to attend the public schools, or at least they didn't at that point in time. So little Barack had to become a citizen of Indonesia, and that's not particularly a nation where we have dual citizenships. Mary makes a good point that if Barack is the son of Davis, that he would be eligible to hold the office, and that's, again, also a very accurate statement, but little Barack spent time in the public school system in Indonesia. And little Barack also grew up to mid-sized Barack, who then went to college here in the United States. And as far as I can tell, even though these records have been sealed, there have been plenty of people who have come forth and said that he attended school as a foreign student. So is the real reason Barack is trying very hard to keep this information sealed, to keep it quiet, to keep folks away from the real truth involving his actual birth certificate? And does that have to do with the fact that he's afraid he'd be charged with academic fraud, that the schools would demand he pay back all of the aid or scholarship assistance he got as a foreign student, or threaten to invalidate his degrees if he did? I mean, I think we've all seen the Columbia University thing that has been out for a few months now. And I included a picture of it in the player today. If you're watching the media player, it'll roll around ever so often. That shows Barry as a Fordham student. And, of course, while Mary so brilliantly points out that he can afford to pay it back, it's still admitting that he lied and cheated to get his way in. Places like Columbia and Harvard may not take that. I don't think they would take that very well. I think they would feel violated. I think they might threaten to withdraw his degrees. He gained entrance into these schools under false pretenses. He defrauded them. Now, understanding, of course, I don't actually expect the fine folks in academia to come after one of their own, which there's no question, based on his philosophies and his idealism, that Barack Hussein Obama is an academic. He's far more an academic than he is anything else. He's certainly not a leader. Community organizing is not leadership, evidently. He's never ran a business. He doesn't understand budgets, and he doesn't really seem to understand the true constraints of the U.S. Constitution on the office of the president. And Mary says, yes, we know he lies. And, yeah, there are times where I have listened to the man talk for 15, 20 minutes and wondered if I heard 20 seconds continuously, or actually even just 20 seconds out of the whole thing, where he wasn't telling a lie. And that's counting the pauses and the breaks between the words. Like a lot of folks on the far end of the left spectrum, some of these folks wouldn't know the truth if it came up, slapped them in the face, bit them on the nose, and introduced themselves. But otherwise, what is the reason for hiding this birth certificate? Why keep it sealed? Why did he keep the information about his passport for his little college-age trip into Afghanistan secret for so long? The man has said during the early days of his political career that his conversion to Christianity was one of political expediency, in essence, insinuating that he never actually converted. And when you look at the church he was attended with Jeremiah, right? Don't know why I wanted to say Isaiah there, but the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, the black liberation philosophy, that's about as Christian as, that's almost as Christian as what Muhammad was preaching a few centuries ago. Black liberation philosophy is about hate, and there's not a lot of Christianity involved in that ideology. So I guess that kind of still works for him. What doesn't work is trying to keep these dirty little secrets. I mean, in truth, we talk about this because we don't know. And the reason we don't know is because, for whatever reason, the mechanisms in our government that are supposed to verify that you are a natural-born citizen are no longer interested in doing that. Why? Was this guy an honest-to-goodness Manchurian candidate? I've heard a lot of folks say this before. I've said it myself. I think that's probably the case. But how far does this deception go so that the Federal Election Commission is okay with leaving him on the ballot with no verification of that birth certificate up front? Now, COG said that both Hillary and John McCain would not have hesitated for an instant to use this against Barack during the primaries and then during the presidential race. But you're forgetting that both of those candidates, albeit via different parties, were still part of the progressive movement. Now, John McCain is a progressive. We've seen that in the majority of his policies. John McCain is most conservative when it's primary race time, when he's won his primary, or when there's no election cycle in the immediate future. John McCain is about as progressive as anybody else. And don't get me wrong, John McCain, he was a true American hero. I honor the service to this nation that he gave us. And as a prisoner of war, he deserves a special modicum of respect for that. But John McCain does not get a free pass forever. John McCain does not get a free pass forever because he did something right when he was young, because he's not that same man anymore. Like a lot of people who go to D.C., he has fallen into that cesspool, and he has been wrapped around, and he has joined the Progressive Legion. So what is the end game for the progressives? Well, COG in the chat room says that Hillary is loyal to him, it seems. Well, he also said that McCain's his lapdog, and I'm assuming we're talking about little Barack, who's not so little anymore. Hillary, I already pointed out, Hillary's tried to distance herself, talking about how the Obama administration does not have a foreign policy. They don't seem to have a policy at all. They've got Obamacare, and then they've got a bunch of lies. They have every effort to institute Cloward and Piven, opening up our southern border and bringing in all of these children, even though we know a lot of these so-called children are adults, are gang members, are thugs. And believe me, we don't need to import any more thugs. We have enough of them here in this country already. it also comes down to one simple thing, and that is Hillary wants to be president, still wants to be president. So she and her loyalty to the Obama administration isn't to Obama and his administration. It's still to the Democratic Party. And as long as we have people that are more concerned with being loyal to the party than they are about serving the American people, things aren't going to get any better. This court case is important because we need it settled. The very fact that the instant somebody started talking about this birth certificate and started talking about his eligibility, the birth certificate should have been released, and that should have been the end of it. It should have been done. It shouldn't have took years before a fraudulent certificate was released, and one that was so poorly done that people would know instantly it was a fraud. I mean, we have been blaming the people, calling these people incompetent for a very long time, but it's hard to believe that they were really so incompetent that they thought anybody would believe this, that nobody would stop and say, hey, by the way, you got the name of the hospital wrong. Hey, by the way, Kenya wasn't called Kenya then. Hey, by the way, there's lots of other problems here with this so-called birth certificate. They had to know. Or they really are the dumbest bunch of people to ever play this game of politics. And they really are just playing at it. Now, Mary in the chat room actually says, he's playing with us. So then what's the point? Because he still likes having people stand up and say, hey, by the way, what's up with this? And he goes, ha-ha, look at those birthers. Because that's the other side of the issue. The instant they try to go ahead and utilize the rules for radicals, they start trying to demonize you. They start getting people to try and make fun of you for making a point. We need it settled. We have to have it settled. Because how many problems do we currently have that go away if suddenly everything that Barack, a.k.a. the occupier, how many problems go away the instant that everything that Barack has signed into law suddenly isn't law anymore? I mean, I've heard people say, oh, well, if you get Barack removed regardless, then that automatically puts Biden in the presidency. I'm not really convinced that's the case if it's a matter of he was never eligible to hold office in the first place. He committed fraud. I think it's actually criminally prosecutable, but not being a full-blown lawyer, I can't say for a fact, but I do think that the entire ticket gets removed. If that's not the way it is, I'm sure there's – I don't think there's ever been a precedent, so I say let's go for that precedent. Let's get the entire ticket removed. Now, are we any better off? We would have been a lot worse off in the early days, the first 2 years of Barack's first term, because that would have put Nancy Pelosi there. Heaven help us. That's about the only scenario I can think of that would actually have been much worse. But would we really be much better off if Speaker of the House now, Mr. John Boehner, who also seems to be pretty much spineless, doesn't seem to understand the constitutional requirements of his job, doesn't seem to understand that the purse strings are there, and that anything that Barack or anything that our good friend over in the Senate, the majority leader, anything they've got up their sleeve, anything they've got pushed through, you can defund it. And there's nothing that the other two branches can do. So with all that said and done, we're going to go ahead and switch gears again, and we're going to talk about one of our topics. We're going to go ahead and do the headlines you may have missed. This time I decided to switch gears completely away from politics for a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that Mark David Chapman was denied parole again. Now, for those of you who may not know, Mark David Chapman was the man who shot and killed John Lennon. This was the eighth time he was up for parole. The parole panel this time wrote quite clearly in the letter Wednesday, stating that you would not live and remain at liberty without again violating the law. And they also added that this victim had displayed kindness to you earlier in the day and your actions have devastated a family and those who love the victim. And this effort talking about a ton of fans. If you're a Beatles fan, then you know who John Lennon is. If you were a John Lennon fan after he left the Beatles, then you know these things. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, heavily influenced by the Beatles, big Beatle fan. There are exactly two people in the world I know who are literally Beatles encyclopedias. One is Gary Patterson, who I do hope to get on the show sometime. He's authored several books on that and several other issues. And then the other is this guy. His name's Cash Islow. Like I've mentioned before, Cash is a part of the group Simmons. So if you're familiar with the Nashville music business, then you're familiar with him. Cash is the lead singer for Simmons, and he is a Beatles expert. And I just wanted to kind of get his perspective. First of all, thanks for joining us today, Cash.
How you doing, Tim?
Doing pretty well, thanks.
Good to be here, buddy. I'm losing a little connection here. Go ahead.
All right. Well, just stay with us as best you can. And, oh, by the way, allow me to wish you a happy anniversary to you and Linda both.
Thank you so much. Going on 2 years. I know it doesn't seem like very long, but 2 years is 2 years. But, Speaking of the Chapman situation, of course, denied parole again. And for me, growing up as a Beatle fan, of course, I was a kid in the 60s, of course, and Chapman did more than just take a life. He took the dream of, at that time, you know, at that period of time in 1980, took the dream of any hope of the Beatles ever rejoining and, you know, getting back together, recording, writing, what have you. So that was for all of us Beatle fans at that time, the news of John Lennon's death was completely devastating, you know. It was just an end of an era. Of course, as it is, John advocated peace and love, you know, in his later years. In his earlier years, he was, quote, an angry young man. A couple of things I remember and recall. Of course, the big thing he did was in 65, quoted that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus Christ. And, of course, in the Bible Belt here in the South, that didn't fly too well. But he was just saying people would rather come see the Beatles in concert than to go to church. That's basically what he was trying to say. Also, of course, the manager of the Beatles at the time, Brian Epstein, wrote a book called Cellar Full of Noise. And Lennon, being who he was, the angry young man as he was at that time, of course, Brian Epstein was gay, and not anything wrong with that, of course. But he suggested that Brian Epstein call his book Queer Jew. Then later said he ought to call it Cellar Full of Noise. I mean, Cellar Full of Boys, excuse me. So Lennon was very, he was a speak his mind and not care type of person. Of course, later in life, like I say, he advocated all this peace and love, but it is a shame that he had to have his life ended at the hands of someone who just earlier, that same day, Lennon had signed the album that he had just recently come out with. He had signed an album for Chapman. And then, of course, later on, we all know Chapman killed him. So, I got mixed emotions about Lennon's death and all that, but I was a huge Beatle fan growing up, for sure.
Great. Well, you know, I got to tell you, from having spent time, I wasn't turned on to the Beatles as a young guy, but I came to them a little bit later, and there was definitely, in musical terms, a special kind of magic around these guys. But as we kind of looked at the evolution, though, there in the later days, that peace and love and joy also kind of sounded like he was endorsing communism, too. So from a political standpoint, I can't let that go unsaid.
I realize you're I've heard your views on that before, Mr. Tapp. That's fine. I grew up a fan. The phenomenon about the whole Beatle thing for me is at the time of no internet and no media anywhere close to like it is in today's age, they were pretty much every young person knew who they were, and they were virtually shortly after 1964 known all over the world without the kind of media explosion of whatever in the past 20 years anyway we have today. You know, it's just amazing what they accomplished without. I mean, just imagine you couldn't probably do your show. We couldn't get all these tidbits of all kinds of information all over the world, obviously, without what's going on with the media explosion these days. But yet at that time, it seems like they could do nothing without somebody saying something, seeing it, it being put in a paper, magazines, well, what have you. But that's, to me, the phenomenon of the Beatles, that's the whole deal. They changed the history of music, just wrote their own songs, did things their own way, and, of course, paved the highway for the rest of us wannabe musicians to make it one day, helpers.
All right. Do you feel like there's any political activity involved with continuing to deny Chapman parole? Or is this a guy who's literally so imbalanced that he just probably shouldn't be released into the general public again?
Well, according to the parole board, they have admitted that he's not safe to be free. He would commit another crime immediately, is what I've been reading. I think Chapman's, from the documentaries that I've seen on him and his life and the Lennon thing, I just think he's a disturbed individual that, I don't know. You know, political? I don't know, man. I just think he took a life. So anytime you take a life, you got to pay for it. And whether it's some unknown guy down the street or someone like John Lennon, it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, he pulled the trigger. And it's as sad as it is, that's just the way it is.
Certainly difficult to argue with that. And, you know, I wish more people had that mentality. When you commit a crime, you have to pay the consequences for that crime. And if this guy is as unbalanced as he seems to be, then yeah. But you know, I ask the question because I've heard some people insinuate that there was a quick rush to judgment, in which, you know, the guy, maybe he was imbalanced. But maybe that imbalance made him not such a reliable witness in his own trial as to what actually happened. People have pieced it together. And as much as I don't necessarily want to put on that tinfoil hat over this issue, I'm not ashamed to put on my tinfoil hats, but this one is one I don't really want to do it with. I wanted to address the question because I've heard a lot of people say that, hey, there was something else to it. So.
It is a matter of opinion. I don't know if in everything that's going on in today's world, the issues that we're having, if Chapman had been, you know, approved, who would have even probably cared? You know, be honest with the things, what things are going on now. I mean, it wouldn't even matter. For me personally, though, I hope he stays behind bars forever, and as I said a little earlier, that I think that's the same feelings of every Beatle fan that's across the world, which there's plenty of us.
All right. Well, I'll tell you this much. I don't know who would have cared if he'd been released, if that had been the announcement Friday immediately, but if he had gotten out and killed somebody, every last person in this country would be crying out and asking what the heck this panel was thinking to let this crazy hound loose. That's how that plays all the time.
That's how that would, yes, of course. I agree with you 1,000% on that. I think it's in his best, the world's best interest just to leave Chapman behind bars, and that's where he needs to stay. I think he's up parole again in 2016, and I seriously doubt they'll release him then. So it remains to be seen. But, Mr. Tapp, you and your Use Your Brain show, as I appreciate you having me on and discussing a little bit about Lennon and Chapman, though.
Well, actually, I've been looking for an excuse to get you on for a while now, and I'm glad to finally gotten one that I could get you nailed in. And I appreciate you taking the time, especially today on your anniversary. That really means a lot to me, willing to give up a little bit of that time and let Linda know how much I appreciate that as well. Enjoy the rest of your anniversary, and I will talk to you again very soon. And thanks for coming on again.
All right. Thank you for having me, bud. I appreciate it, and maybe we can make a habit out of this. But I shall talk to you soon.
All right, sir. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Cash Easlow, a musician and a friend of mine. At some point, we'll probably get some links up to some of the stuff so you guys can hear it. He's been working on some solo stuff recently, too. Like I said, he's a personal friend. I've known him for a little while now. And his insights to the Beatles are really good. And I really wanted to get that feel because, again, like I said, the news of Chapman not getting parole, to me it looks like, okay, here's a guy who shot somebody. But the perspective, folks, because this was a big deal when it happened. This was a big deal then. And now it's just like a blurb, okay, he was denied again, and that's the end of it. And so that's what made it the headlines you may have missed section today. And, of course, I noticed, by the way, folks dropped out of the chat room. This wasn't a big winner on today's topic for what they tuned in to hear. But hopefully you guys will start creeping back in because we're going to shift gears again here in just a moment. I know there's still plenty of live listeners listening. I appreciate you guys staying with me. I'm going to take another quick break. And after that, we're going to cover a little more information. And we're going to move on with these so-called fixes for the birth control mandates from Obamacare. We'll be right back. Stay with me. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Tim Tapp, and I don't normally do this because it's not particularly helpful towards getting guests to come on the show, but I've decided to come out and endorse a candidate for U.S. Senate here in Tennessee. You've heard him on the show several times at this point, and his name is Danny Page. Washington, D.C. was once a place where men of honor went to debate the issues and to govern the land with the best interest of America in mind. Since then, it's become a swamp filled with quicksand, vipers, and other predators with no goal other than to acquire wealth and power at the expense of the American people. There's only one way to fix that. We the people must elect men and women of great character with high moral standards who will hold themselves and their colleagues accountable to these standards, who will listen to their constituents, who will stand up and honestly debate the issues, men and women who will once again put America first. With that in mind, I wholeheartedly and without reservation endorse Danny Page for U.S. Senate. Tennessee needs a conservative voice in D.C. And America deserves better than Lamar Alexander. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for staying with me. See, some of the folks are starting to creep back into the chat room. Thanks, guys. Wanted to make sure that we also talked a little bit about LadyPatriotSpace.com. You've heard me talk in the past about the social media that is how social media has become biased against conservatives, and there's no question that that's the case. But there are some safe havens for conservative people that are involved with social media. If you're conservative and you're looking for a place where you don't have to worry about the trolls and what have you, then you've got some options. And I've talked about and endorsed Tea Party Community for a long time, and I still highly recommend them and hope that some of the Tea Party folks are actually listening today. And I've also talked about LadyPatriotSpace.com. And that's a place where they don't necessarily require you to be conservative. They just want you to be a patriot. And believe it or not, there are some liberals that still love America. They're just maybe slightly a little misguided. So guess what? You guys, as long as you love America, you are welcome at LadyPatriotSpace.com. So go ahead, check it out, sign up, see how you like it. I'm guessing you probably will. It has been completely redone, so they're in the process of rebuilding the membership, so now's a good time to get in there. They made some changes to get rid of the spamming and the trolling, and it's a situation now where if you love America, you're free to go there, and that's where I hope that we will see you at soon. Now, we're going to go ahead and talk about the White House and their effort to comply with the Supreme Court on the ruling on birth control. But before we get too far into that, I wanted to talk about how this story was being reported through most of the media outlets, because everybody was talking about this for the last couple of days. It started primarily at the Huffington Post, their online division. That's where I first saw the story, and then, of course, everybody else was picking up on it because it was being made out to be a big deal, but most of the liberal media outlets were reporting this as White House releases new rules to fix birth control issues. They made it sound like it was all Barack Obama standing up and he was taking charge, and he was fixing the problem, and this was going to be that, and that was going to be it, and no more issues. But the best headline I saw was from the Washington Examiner that simply says, White House tries to comply with Supreme Court ruling on birth control. Translation, guess what, libs? All of you who want to gather around the fire and hug a tree and sing kumbaya, sorry to break it to you, but it's not Barack taking charge. It's Barack being put in his place, at least on this one issue that the Supreme Court says you cannot force nonprofits to provide birth control in a form that does not meet their religious viewpoints. Now, under the new rules that were released this past Friday, the Obama administration said for-profit companies like Hobby Lobby can avoid paying for their employees' birth control costs through the same Obamacare exemption given to religious groups. The Obama administration also unveiled the policy shift after the Supreme Court ruled earlier this year that closely held corporations should not be forced to pay for their workers' contraception if they have religious objections. Now, I would go one step further and say that they shouldn't be forced to pay for it anyway. It doesn't matter if it's religious or not. Because here's the ultimate thing. We've been told time and time again, we've been told over and over again that guess what? We don't want the government in our bedrooms. Well, the instant you start having taxpayers pay for part of the stuff that's going on in your bedroom, they've got a right to come busting in. Or at least that's always been the mindset. And guess what? I really don't think you can have it both ways. Maybe some people think they can. I, for one, do not. Maybe some people think it's perfectly okay for the government to be in their bedroom, but these are the same people that would probably have a fit the instant they were being told who they could have sex with. And it's really on that slippery slope, not too far of a move. That's a very slippery slope. And I've addressed this in a blog posting a while back, but you can find it at tapintothetruth.com. And, you know, we can continue to talk about this, but, you know, this still comes back to these new rules. Now, as outlined by the administration, the companies and religious groups would notify the government of their objections to covering birth control for their employees. The insurance companies would then pick up the cost of the contraception before being reimbursed by the federal government. Still, some religious groups are likely to object to that rule, knowing that they are essentially opening the door for the employees to receive insurance coverage for birth control. Now, the administration is hoping this latest concession will end its lengthy dispute with religious organizations. Why do they hope that? Because they've been getting their backsides kicked in court on this. Quote, today, the administration took several steps to ensure women whose coverage is threatened will receive coverage for recommended contraceptive services through their health care plans at no additional cost, as they should be entitled to under the Affordable Care Act, while continuing the administration's goal of respecting religious beliefs, end quote. That came from the White House Deputy Press Secretary Eric Schultz, who also said, what these rules do is help ensure that women have access to contraceptive coverage. Now, this is the spin. This is the spin that we're getting. Why are we getting this spin? Well, because Obama cannot afford to be seen as weak here in the States. Politically, this would look weak to his constituency. Why? Well, because he's promised that he's going to provide all these many things. But in truth, he knew, constitutionally speaking, there's nothing to it. In truth, he knew that he could not possibly bring about the kind of changes that need to be done in order to make his utopian society exist. He was surprised to find out that there's still not as many people as he thought that have fallen under the spell and become complete and total sheeple. The media did its job here, if you believe its job is to help provide cover for the Obama administration and the political left. They did the job because almost all of them wrote very flattering headlines and wrote the story up to make it sound like that Obama himself had personally took to the reins and said, you know, while I think that we should be doing this, now that I think about it, the Constitution might be right on this issue, and we shouldn't force people who have a religious objection to do this. But in truth, this is a case where he's being drugged, kicking and screaming to face the reality that he never had the authority to force this mandate in the first place. And again, I will state that I don't believe he has the authority to force this mandate on anyone, whether there's a religious objection or not. If you want an insurance policy that is going to cover your contraception, then you need to buy that, and you need to be the one paying for that, because ultimately it's not my responsibility to make sure that you are practicing safe sex. Now, I would encourage you to do so, But it's not my responsibility to make sure that you are. So don't ask me to pay for it. Don't ask my neighbor over here to pay for it. Don't ask Juan Fernandez from California to pay for it. Don't ask Mary to pay for it. Don't ask any of the people that listen to this show to pay for it. Don't ask any of the people that are listening to the other shows on the freaking MSNBC. Don't ask anybody else to take responsibility for your bedroom behaviors, because that's on you. So step up and take care of it. When the young lady that we all know and love went before Congress testifying that as a student at Georgetown, a Catholic university, which she full well knew was a Catholic university at the time she enrolled there, by the way, that because of the policies there on campus that she was being discriminated against, and it was difficult, if not impossible, for her to afford birth control. Now, I don't know how much birth control is running in the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area of the country, because I've never stopped off there to buy any. So I don't know. Maybe it is a crazy price tag there, but according to everything I've seen, and you know, when I do the research and do the comparative stuff, and I actually did it at one point. I don't remember what the numbers are. I probably should have in this instance, but I didn't really think about taking this particular example. Generally speaking, contraceptives are cheap. Generally speaking, you can get plenty of very effective contraceptives at a relatively low price. And if you can't afford that, then maybe as a college student, you should be spending more time focusing on your studies than having wild, passionate, promiscuous sex with multiple partners. Because that's not really a protected right. Now, am I saying you don't have the right to do that? No. It's your life. You do it. I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to be a fan, but I'm not going to take steps to support it either. A protected right is something our federal government should be willing to spend some taxpayer monies on and to protect. That's not a protected right. Hobby Lobby stood up, and I thank them for standing up for the rights of the religious people in this country across the board. The Catholic Charities stood up, and they had to fight back. And once these got to the Supreme Court, there was no question. These are in violation of our basic civil liberties guaranteed us in the initial 10 amendments, a.k.a. the Bill of Rights. This is an important story, not because America has been under assault constitutionally, especially people of faith, but because we have seen that at least on some issues, our Supreme Court is willing to stand up and do the right thing. So it's not too late, ladies and gentlemen. It is not too late for us to save our great nation. We have time. We have opportunity. We have got to find the right people to send to D.C. We've got to send them there for a short period of time, and then we've got to bring them out and find more people to put behind them that are also good people. Just like in my earlier endorsement of Danny Page, we have got to find people and elect men and women of great character and high moral standards. They have to have the great character so that we know we're going to stand up and say no to the free money. So they're going to stand up and say no to the special interests that are going to try and corrupt them. We need a return to constitutionally limited government. We need to be watching and protecting ourselves. We need to be closing down our borders, closing them down, preventing legal immigration, but shutting them down so that people aren't just walking across willy-nilly and we have no idea who they are. immigration is an issue that needs to be dealt with. And when you have Mimi Nancy Pelosi running across the House floor chasing somebody away from the microphone because he made the point that for 2 years the Democrats had full control of both houses and the White House, and they could have done something about immigration reform then and didn't bother, because that's an inconvenient truth, as our friend Al Gore would say. It's still a truth that needs to be heard, and it's a truth that needs to be dealt with. Do we need comprehensive immigration reform? You know, for the longest time, all I said, the only reform we needed with immigration is that we start enforcing the laws that already exist. I've evolved a little bit on that because I have taken a longer, harder look at what all is entailed with legal immigration, and I do think we probably need to have some reform with how it's currently done, because the process requires a great deal more than I think should be as far as how long the process is. Now, granted, I do think there should be a length of time involved so that we know that these aren't people who are simply trying to make their way inside the country. We don't want the criminal aspect showing up. We don't want terrorists legally immigrating here. We want to be able to check their backgrounds. We want to be able to make sure that they're honestly wanting to be American citizens. Because I would love for every last person on the whole planet to embrace everything that is awesome about America and choose to become American citizens. I would love that. And I would say that we would no longer require immigration. We could just let the whole freaking world be the United States of America. And that would be awesome. And I'm not talking about imperialistic expansion. I'm talking about people embracing the ideas, people embracing the concepts of individual liberty, which also, by definition, requires individual responsibility. If we can get people to do that, then things like terrorism, for the most part, go away. Things like fighting over resources go away, because, you know what, we're sharing them then. Now, we're not just opening up and saying, hey, take this and I'll take that. We're still conducting capitalism. People are still going to have an opportunity to improve their individual status. You see, that's what we need. We need people to believe that education will impact their lives. We need people to be able to engage in critical thought and critical thinking. I don't ask you, when you tune into this show, to think like I do. I ask you to think. If you have a point of view that is different than mine, great. That's awesome. And if you want to, you can pick up the phone and call me at 347-426-3550, and we can talk about it on air, or you can hop in the chat room and you can say something. Or if you come across the show later on in podcasts, where you can find us at iTunes, you can find us at Stitcher.com, you can find us at TuneIn.com, you can find us there in podcast form, and you can send me an email at the website, tapintothetruth.com. You can send me a direct email without having to go to the website if you like, at ttap@tapintothetruth.com. Tap being spelled like my name, T-A-P-P. You can do that, and we can discuss it. And if I have some really good comments, I'll even share them on future broadcasts if you get in touch with me after the broadcast is over. I welcome your point of view because I want to have the conversation. We have got to get past the point in time where we are finger-pointing. Finger-pointing and rushing to judgments causes issues that cannot be easily overcome, even when you find out that you're wrong. And that takes us to the first of this week's two outrages of the week. Outrage of the week number one happens to be the lawyers for the Brown family in the Ferguson shooting situation. And what was outrageous is the fact that the lawyer was out there after the private autopsy was completed. The lawyer was out there as the guy and his assistant were both out making media rounds telling people that they could not say what position Mr. Brown was in when he was shot. You had the lawyers in place going around telling everybody who would listen that this second autopsy indeed does prove that Michael Brown was trying to surrender when he was shot. Now, what makes that outrageous is this man is supposed to be, as an attorney, he is an officer of the court. And you cannot tell me he did not have the report in his hand, and you cannot tell me that the conclusions from this private autopsy, which did not read much different than the conclusions of the first autopsy, he didn't know that that conclusion, in fact, was not met, that that conclusion was, in fact, not made. There was nothing indicating in the results from the autopsy that he was trying to surrender at the time he was shot. So we still have the he said, she said. Like I mentioned earlier, near the top of the show, things have changed as far as the information that's leaked out. But this information that's been leaked out still hasn't actually been officially verified. We still don't have the official medical reports for the officer involved in this case. What we have is speculation. If it turns out, and again, the reason why I'm doing this is because I myself have been calling for avoiding a rush to judgment. I will tell you that I hope, I pray that the officer's version of events are true, not because I relish the fact that somebody got shot in the street, but because I want to believe that this police officer was doing his duty when he had to discharge his weapon. I want to believe that he was serving and protecting the public en masse in Ferguson, not knowing the extent to how dangerous this guy really was or could have continued to be. I want to believe that because I know for a fact that the overwhelming majority of police officers are good guys doing a tough job. I want to believe it because I have put my faith in the hands of the men and women who wear blue. They risk their lives every day. Even the bad cops risk their lives every day when they go out to do their jobs. So it is absolutely outrageous that the attorneys for the family would be out there perpetrating what was obviously a lie. Was it just to try and help win in the court of public opinion? I think it's too late for that. As more of the facts come out, more of the agitators are going to go away because they're going to come to know that it's not a winning argument for their excuses to incite hatred and racism and to try and further the divides between people. But until that information is officially verified, I cannot sit here and unequivocally tell you that the cop was right, the guy was wrong. I can't do it. I'm hoping that that information will come out. I'm hoping that that will be the case and that I can, in fact, come here and tell you, new Black Panther Party, get out of Ferguson, you're irrelevant, don't come to these places. Nation of Islam, when the attorney general says, I'm going to show up and I'm going to talk to the community, he's not talking about the Black community. He's talking about the community, the people of Ferguson. So don't be whining that you weren't included in that conversation. Get out of Ferguson. The people of Ferguson need to be allowed to grieve the loss of this young man. They need to be allowed to clean up the mess made by outsiders who came in to aggravate and agitate a bad situation. Politicians need to stop trying to make their name on this issue. The fact that this shooting was politicized, while it was inevitable, it was also just as unfortunate because the rush to judgment that inevitably comes when you politicize something like this leads people down a path to a bad place. So this outrage, these lawyers, these officers of the court, they're violating the public trust, and worse than that, they're not serving the best interest of their clients because they're making themselves look like jokes. In this particular case, it was one of the lawyers in particular. But it's outrageous. You had seen the report. You had it in your hand, and you know the exact same thing that the gentleman that conducted the autopsy and his assistant were both out at the exact same time on other media outlets saying the exact opposite of what you were saying. And on the topic of our illustrious Attorney General, Mr. Eric Holder, making his stop, things seem to have calmed down since his visit. So if that's the end result of it, then I guess it was a good thing. But it's sadly obvious that this was more about optics and political judgment than it was about trying to see justice done. For those of you who bought into our illustrious Attorney General's presence there and the fact that the federal investigation would be going on, there's a few things that you need to keep in mind. Number one, they're still conducting their federal investigation into George Zimmerman in regards to the Trayvon Martin case, which, by the way, that should have been ended some time ago, and I still fail to see exactly why it is that there was a federal investigation into George Zimmerman. There was a federal investigation and conviction of six police officers in New Orleans right after Hurricane Katrina, of which the convictions were immediately overturned because of, and I quote, gross misconduct by the federal prosecutors. They broke the rules to get their conviction, and it was easily provable in the appeal. But what's even more important for you to keep in mind is that whether you're hoping for this police officer to be thrown in jail and allowed to rot, regardless of whether or not he was assaulted the way it's been described, or whether or not he really is some hated guy who was racist and just wanted to shoot down somebody and it seemed like a decent excuse, if you've made up your mind that that's your goal without caring which one of those is the truth, then you're not seeking justice. Justice has to provide a reasonable result for both parties. And while there will never be anything that can console the parents of this 18-year-old young man, there is no justice in having a police officer who was attacked and who was then trying to protect the public. If he had been bum-rushed the way it's been described by about 12 or so individual eyewitnesses, there's no justice in this officer suffering any more than he has to if he wasn't actually at fault. So again, I feel bad for his parents. I really do. And I feel bad for him. He should not have been in a situation where he ended up getting shot and killed. But you can't blame the cop if the cop had no choice left. And it's just that simple. And if you want justice, our system takes a little while because sometimes it takes a little while for all the facts to come out. I would not be surprised if the grand jury didn't bring forth a conviction. Well, I'm sorry, not a conviction, but an indictment against this officer. I would be surprised, however, if this indictment led to a conviction. And race has nothing to do with the outcome of this case, only with the optics around it. Okay, we're going to hit the second outrage of the week, and that is the indictment against Governor Perry of Texas. Now, most of you probably already heard this, but it is still absolutely ridiculous that this is taking place, and it is an outrage. You're talking about a case where Governor Perry is being accused of abusing his veto authority. Now, for those of you who are not in Texas, you may not understand how this goes, but Texas has probably one of the weakest governor positions in the country. And the idea is they don't want the governor running roughshod over the state. They wanted the people to do it. So the legislature has more authority and has in itself far more limited authority than most states, but it has way more authority than the governor does. But one of the few actual unequivocated powers that the governor has is the power of the veto when it comes to certain funding. And the funding in question here was in regards to a public integrity unit. The reason the public integrity unit in this case was being denied its funds is because the district attorney elected, a Democrat, elected in the only Democratic district in the whole freaking state of Texas, evidently, also happens to be a convicted drunk driver and was, in fact, not that long ago, arrested again for drinking and driving and had to be restrained. Made multiple threats to the law enforcement officers. Again, over and over again, do you know who I am? I will have this done. And there were accusations of far worse behavior, but since there's no independent verification of that, I'm not going to go into that. The bottom line is, however, that this lady is supposed to be the chief law enforcement officer of this particular county, and she herself cannot keep herself out from behind the wheel of a motor vehicle when she is intoxicated. And evidently intoxication is an ongoing condition that this lady suffers from. She's obviously an alcoholic and needs to get some help with that. Not that I'm a big on the bandwagon of all this rehab crap, because it's pretty obvious, I think, that rehab don't work very well, very often, for nearly anybody. For every one success story, there's at least 100,000 stories where people have to go into rehab 7 or 8 times and nothing gets accomplished. Governor Perry basically said, I'm using my authority in this case because it is utterly ridiculous that somebody who cannot stay sober and cannot stay out from behind the wheel of a motor vehicle when she is drunk should have anything to do with running a public integrity unit. So then this DA, using her authority as a DA, seeks a grand jury that also, by the way, just FYI, happens to have a chief Democratic operative for the state seated on the panel. Now, that may just be coincidence. There may be no reason whatsoever why that matters. But I think it's important to know it, because it seems like the kind of thing that he probably denied and that probably got seated that way because it never came up during the process of seating the jurors for the grand jury. Did somebody from the Democratic Party in Texas have an axe to grind with Governor Perry? Somebody who the Democrats are screaming is horrible and inhumane because of his actions of putting the National Guard on the Texas border to try and slow down the influx of the illegal immigrants? Somebody who had been getting pats on the back and congratulations nationwide for having the gumption and the cojones to stand up and say, No more. If D.C. isn't going to do their job under the Constitution, I have the right then to step up and do it for them within my own state's borders. And that's what he did. Could it have to do any at all with the fact that Governor Perry is still one of the top names mentioned when people talk about possible GOP contenders for the White House in 2016? Is it also a coincidence that some of the other names that pop up are also under federal investigation? Chris Christie, whether you like him or not, he's not one of my favorites, but I know he's still one of the names that gets mentioned a lot when it comes to GOP presidential campaigners. When you're looking at the presidency upcoming, people still talk about him a lot. He's still under federal investigation over the Bridgegate scandal. One of my personal favorites, Governor Walker from Wisconsin, also mentioned quite often in certain circles when it comes to the GOP, also under federal investigation. Is that coincidence? Are they trying to target these people specifically? Yes, but here's the thing that should tell you more than anything else when it comes to this indictment being handed down. David Axelrod. You know, Barack's former right-hand man, David Axelrod. Even he's come out and said that this indictment was sketchy. And, you know, considering the political spectrum where he falls at, for him to say that, that's strong words. Those are strong words from him. You should not expect him to come out just ripping and roaring and going off like some wild man, like you might even actually expect me to get on a roll and rant about. You should expect him to be very measured and not really want to comment about it at all. But he commented and he made the statement that this indictment's very sketchy. Now, Governor Perry has handled this extremely well. He turned himself in, he did his plea, and he is moving on. This is so clearly political. So how on earth does this actually get to this point? Because it's clear this particular attorney general, this wonderful lady by all accounts, who knows, she may have even been at Martha's Vineyard, because it sounds like when she starts drinking that a good time is had by all, at least until it's time to drive home. What is going to happen in this country if we keep electing people like this and not people of character? Where is the rest of the outrage? The entire country should be outraged by this story because this is clearly political attack. This guy's got a target on him because he's got the potential of being a presidential candidate. He might even be a pretty good candidate, all in all. How does some low-level person – I've heard the statement before, and I'm sure you guys probably have too. A particularly well-known judge once said that a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich. And they can. The evidence is put in front of them. They're supposed to look at it, and then they're supposed to make a determination, not whether there's enough to convict, not whether or not there's enough to be – overly concerned, but they do need to look at the evidence and say, is there enough to warrant a trial, an actual hearing, discovery, and further investigation? And while that may very well be the case, what reaches that standard? Well, I think that standard moves depending on who's sitting on that grand jury. If you've got a bunch of Democratic political operatives sitting on that grand jury and your target is Governor Perry, and I think that's a very low bar to reach. But you know what? Our legal system, I have faith in it in general. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to play out the way it needs to play out. Wanted to talk a little bit in the final few minutes here. Obviously, there's not enough time to take any more phone calls at this point. So if you've just come along, sorry, feel free to shoot me an email later, and we can discuss it back and forth. We can even set up a time for you to come on to the next show and discuss it. I wanted to get a little bit to this continued ISIS situation, get an update. And the update is as follows. The person currently occupying the White House is clueless. Okay, not exactly a hot news flash. I get that. He's still hiding in this haze of inexperience and cluelessness. This love, his embracing of the Muslim Brotherhood has him blinded to the fact that ISIS is embracing this idea, this strange philosophy that somehow all of Islam is his friend. My name is Barack Hussein, after all. And Barry, guess what? Some of them actually believe your little BS story about converting from Islam. Now, whether you have or not, I don't care. But for radicalized Islam, that matters to them. If they think that you were a Muslim and you converted away from Islam, then you are the absolute worst of the worst kind of infidel, and you're at the top of the list of the people that they want to behead. Suddenly there's this new energy around the Defense Department and the Pentagon, and suddenly they're telling the White House that this is a real threat. So a speech gets made, and then it goes off. And sadly, these people seem to be trying to get Barack Hussein Obama's attention. So, and again, I'm not calling for this to happen. I probably shouldn't even say it. I'm sitting here, I'm debating. I probably shouldn't say it. But you know what? If you really want to get Barack Hussein Obama's attention, you probably need to go, I don't know, blow up a golf course. You probably need to blow up a golf course in Hawaii. You probably need to go blow up a spa at Martha's Vineyard. That's the kind of thing that's going to get his attention. You need to blow up an apartment building in Chicago. Will that matter? No. No, it won't, because, you know, he doesn't really care about the people in Chicago. It's got to be something that's going to affect him directly. Excuse me. It's going to have to be something that's going to really get under his skin. So if that's what you're trying to do, if you're trying to get his attention, there you go. Stop killing innocent Americans. Stop killing innocent Christians. Stop killing innocent Yazidis. Stop killing Kurdistanish people. Go blow up Martha's Vineyard. Go blow up the golf course near the White House. That will get his attention. That'll be the statement that gets you noticed. Otherwise, forget about it. He didn't care. He's disconnected. ISIS is a continuing threat, and it's going to continue to get stronger and stronger. That's part of why I wanted to lead off with the story about the jihadist serial killer today. We need to be aware that these things are happening, and we need to know the extent that people who have crossed our border are jihadists. We need to know the extent that American-born people have converted to Islam or grew up in Islamic homes but have been radicalized. They want to kill us. We need to know exactly whether or not we need to be concerned that places like Ferguson, Missouri, can be used as a starting point for the extension of the ISIS caliphate into parts of North America. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not alarmist talk. This is not something that's completely off the rails. This is the simple fact that we live in dangerous times. And those dangerous times are continuing to just get more dangerous because we have an administration that stands up and tells us during a press conference, they send out their little minions and tell us that this was not the act, talking about the beheading of the American photojournalist. This was not the act of
someone engaged in religious activity. This is not a terrorist action. And then they turn around and say, yes, this is a terrorist action. We have Eric Holder come out and tell us the Justice Department will be pursuing this as an investigation, when it's clearly an act of war. The Defense Department needs to be running point, not the Justice Department, especially our useless Justice Department that seems to have no clue what the word justice actually means. So what do we do? We have to continue to reach out to one another. We have to put aside our differences and start watching out for each other in our neighborhoods. We can't count on the feds to keep us safe. That's the job they're charged with. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But we can't count on it. So we have to do that ourselves, not by forming armed vigilante committees. Somebody's going to twist my words there. I can almost count on it. I'll probably get emails about that, probably already getting some. But by watching out for one another, by bridging the gaps in our neighborhoods, in our communities, by understanding the very simple, very basic fact that we, as Americans, have a responsibility and a duty to protect our homeland, but also that we as human beings all across the world have more in common than we have different. It's just some of us, much like Mark David Chapman, are a little unbalanced. Some of us want to take and kill people in the name of our God. If your God demands that you kill innocent people, there's something wrong. And if your God demands that you behead women and children, that you crucify men trying to protect their women and children from you, that you burn the Arabic letter N into people's hands or foreheads before you crucify them or behead them because they follow the Nazarene, because they happen to be Christian, then there is something wrong with you, not with the infidel that just wants to live in peace, but with you, the purveyor of the caliphate, the person who has taken upon yourself along with your jihadist brethren to kill innocent people. Now that's it. We're inside the last minute of the show. So again, thanks for everybody who listened in, especially thanks to the folks that listened in past startup point of the second hour, because a lot of folks dropped off after that for some reason. Wasn't political. I wanted to take a break, obviously. Wanted to discuss that issue, and like I said, I've been looking for an excuse for a while to get my friend on the air, and this was something he would actually come on and talk about. So I hope everybody enjoyed that who listens to the podcast. I appreciate everybody that listened afterwards. Thanks for everybody who was in the chat room. Thanks for listening in today. Had a great audience and saw a lot of the live listening numbers. And I know this in the podcast is going to be even better and bigger. Thanks for listening. I am Tim Tappan. Remember, don't take my word for it. But definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little time, do your own research, and always be prepared to put in some effort on your own to really tap into the truth. Goodbye, everybody.
finally called you mine. We were like, wait, everything is gonna change. Hope when I come back you know my name. I don't think I can say all I need to say. With the time left counting down by the day, it wouldn't go by, I don't know why time flies. It's a heartbreak, but it wasn't